Helaman chapter 4. In the beginning of this, we see that they have several years of dissensions and battles with the Lamanites, and the Lamanites are led by more dissenters. And they, in fact, there's so many dissenters now that they lose even half the land, including the land of Zarahemla. And then it says in verse 11 what the main cause of this, who were the main cause of the wickedness, and it was among those who professed to belong to the church of God. And that's, again, we saw that in the previous chapter. Those who are the instigators of your wickedness are those who profess to belong to the church of God. Because, again, life, the whole world is based on returning to God. There is no world and then kind of a second thing called the Mormon church or those who want to serve God. If you are truly believe in the purpose of life, you realize your church life, if you use those kind of terms, that is your real life and not the rest of the world. The reason the United States exists, do you really believe that? That the reason the United States exists is to protect the Mormon church, which then protects the true followers of Christ. See, at these levels, that's where these protections of the Lord come in. And all I'm doing is I'm using that just only as an example to get you to have the feeling of how we are not orienting our lives around the Lord. We don't believe that He is the real center of our life and that our whole purpose of life is to return to Him. Instead, we think it's the world. And we don't see that the Lord is preserving the world around us just to give us the opportunity to make our choices to serve Him. And when we turn, it's when we as professed followers of Christ turn from Christ, that is what causes the real wickedness in the world and causes the things around us to be falling apart. And that's what we need to focus upon. Well, then it begins to explain what the wickedness in the church was. First, I have to keep repeating, is pride begins. And then pride, that means the lifting of one up above another. And that means saying, oh, he is such a righteous man. Oh, he's a great man. And see, when you start pointing to men, then they start having pride, and it comes from praise. We're not here to praise each other. We're here to help each other serve Christ and have individual relationships. We're not here to uphold another man. But that idea began to enter the church, just like it entered our church back in the times that actually we were in, it began right with Joseph Smith, but began to take control during the times of Brigham Young. And then it's proceeded in that manner. And the leaders have not focused on that to great strength. In fact, the leaders have then all of a sudden slowly been taken over by those who not only have pride, but then have the second great weakness that they care about riches. And we began to even say, well, to be a leader of the church, you've got to be a rich man. And we began to put riches as being important. Well, again, it says here, that was the next thing, was riches. And the riches increase the pride and are the cause of pride. And then, third, then they began to oppress the poor, just like today. What did anybody oppress the poor? What was everyone given in our in the Book of Mormon days? The poor was always given a piece of land and a place where they could have their own inheritance. Obviously, they restructured the laws of the land and of the church so that they weren't given inheritances to the poor anymore. Well, we can see that's meant, because later on this chapter, they will admit that they completely perverted the laws of the land. And that's what happens in the laws of the land. We begin to take over control of the land ourselves as the government and of the people, rather than claiming that the land itself belongs to God. And they were no longer creating or working on a environment, we'll call it an environment, a government, or a life, where the poor had an equal chance, or had a private chance, if you want, an individual chance to provide for themselves, irrespective of any interference of church or government. And they began to like that. And why did they do that? Because it upholds them. They began again with pride, just as today. They take great pride in, oh, I gave all this money to the fast offerings, and oh, I'm taking care of the poor, and look what I'm doing for the poor. They like the poor. That very way of doing that is the oppression of the poor, because you want the poor to lift yourself up. You really don't want to create a state where the poor are equal to you, and you live next door to them. You're not interested in helping the poor. You're interested in helping your own pride. It then began to say that they began to mock the things that were sacred. Do we do that today? Yes. We don't think in baptism that important. We don't require you to know, have heard the voice of Christ as Alma said was a requirement to be a member of the church. We let anyone, we let people have priesthoods and so on and so forth because we think that'll motivate them, and we give them positions because that'll motivate them. Instead of having them motivated first to serve Christ and then having a position later, we do it the other way around, and so we mock those positions. Those things are sacred. We don't have men who are inspired giving out temple recommends, and we let the unworthy go into the temples and so forth, and we can follow this all through the church, and always because we're saying, well, we need to do this because it'll motivate and help the people, and it'll keep our numbers strong, and all these other excuses, and we don't want to, and we need to change temple ceremonies because God didn't know what he was doing. In order to get along with people, we'll change, and everything is a mock to the things that God has given us. And that's what we've done in a degenerative process. And it says that we deny the spirit of prophecy and of revelation. Prophecy of the future, revelation. We deny that our leaders no longer take the Book of Mormon and just give all their speeches right out of the Book of Mormon, showing how the Book of Mormon applies to our day and where it is in our history and magnifying what it means. They don't do that. So they deny the spirit of revelation, and they claim that they need their own precepts to be taught. And this goes on to say that they believed in murdering. Again, do we believe in the wars and so forth, or do we believe in having in peace? No, we believe as a people that that we'll have these wars, and we have to because of the nature of the world. But we don't call upon God and say and believe that He's our that He preserves us and that He will protect us, and we can withdraw from the world and form our own Zion society, and He will protect that Zion society, and we don't have to even belong to America or the United States anymore, that He'll protect us from that, and that therefore we don't have to go to war to fight these stupid wars that our politicians say we should. No, instead we say, no, let us get out there and support all these politicians in their murdering and so forth. And so, therefore, we do support it. And to sit there, and these, when they say murdering, that didn't mean that every person was out murdering and stabbing knives into people. It meant that you let that be part of your society and you supported it. And it does. And when we say support, it means second or third level removed from it. But you're not in the. You're not creating a complete system either with your laws nor with your desires for war to truly do away with it. And it also means that you're creating laws that make it strict. Laws, as we again saw in the righteous days, that you had strict laws with strict punishment to keep it clean. And then it talks about, immediately goes into plundering. Again, we live in a complete plunder society where all the rich, all the leaders of church come from those who believe in plunder instead of being productive themselves. And then lying and stealing and committing adultery. Again, what do all our movies and everything, whether we're out committing adultery, in fact, we still have it in our hearts. We make that part of our entertainment. Adultery is the thing that we keep our eye on continually. And there is not a thing here listed in there that we do not believe in. In fact, it finally comes down to now we live in a state where even our church leaders say they make all their decisions by consensus, meaning if all these men get together and they decide, then that's true. Well, all I'm doing is prefacing verse 13, what it says, that they boast of their own strength. Yes, if all of us men get together and we decide on something, we all vote together, that's got great strength. That's more strength than the prophet receiving the revelations of the Lord. And that's what they say. And so what happens to them? They are left with their own strength. And that's what we have today. And that's what happens. Well, this is we're seeing that this has happened within the church. And they're saying, well, they said the same thing. This is what happened with the major part of their church. But at least in their day, see, they're not as degenerated as we are. In their day, they had been able to move off to the side. But the more degenerative portion of their society and their church, that describes exactly what where we're at today. And again, it said they did not prosper. And why? And they said so they did not prosper, and then they went. And many began to mingle with the Lamanites. Well, see, isn't that what we're doing? See, we say we're not prospering, and so therefore we need to go out into the world instead of again forming a Zion society. We think we have to go mingle with the world. the rest of the world, or we need to go mingle with the Lamanites. Again, in the Book of Mormon, the Nephites stand for the true followers of Christ in general, and the Lamanites stand for the rest of the world who fights against it and who believes in the Babylonian system and so on and so forth. And we go out to it now, and we think that we need to go be part of them. And that is exactly what it's saying here, and this is just, again, the worst portion of their society. But they had some strong men in there still around, as we had in the earlier days of the church. And these strong men came forth, and I'll say most specifically in Joseph Smith and in Brigham Young. And these men preached strong to us, and they had some success. And so it says in verse 14, that's exactly what then Nephi and Moronihah and Lehi did. They went out and they began to prophesy to the people. They preach to them and prophesy. Notice, do we have prophecy today? Well, we got a little bit from Ezra Taft Benson. We had, and he's the last to do it, and then we shut his mouth. But before that, men did not prophesy. And that is what the leaders do. They come out and they tell you what to do, and then they include prophecy with it. That is the sign that your leaders are truly, not truly speaking of the Lord, but are in the full power of the Lord when they speak to you. And so these men, and again I repeat, Ezra Taft Benson did it, and he was turned off and completely ignored by the other leadership of the church. But yet it says here that is exactly the way they're to do it. They must preach to you and include prophecy. And then, so therefore, that's what these men did, and they had success to a degree, and they got many to repent. But when they repent, again, it would be like repenting today. Then they repented and they were baptized. They came under the church, but they did not make a full commitment to Christ. And this is what I've been trying to say. Again, in this record, especially through the two Helamans, they were talking about people who had come to the church, but they did not make a full commitment to Christ. And when Nephi then comes, then we do have those that are making a full commitment to Christ. And so there is the shell, as I keep saying, in there of people who made a full commitment to Christ. And so they're there. Well, nonetheless, they're rehearsing that then, due to the state of the affairs, they have lost half the land. They know they're never going to get that land back. They regained the cities around, and they now have half the land, and they're just going to have to settle for holding that. And they say, they looked around, they say, how did we get in this state? Because they are not only in a bad state, they are so surrounded that they see that they are really at the mercy of the Lamanites. And that the Lamanites are enjoying. See, what are the Lamanites doing right now? They're down in Zarahemla and all these other lands, and they're gathering up the riches that were left behind and the buildings. And see, they're living off of the remnants of what the Nephites left. Again, what is this country, America, today is living off of what was built by the Lord to establish His church in. Interested about going to war against the Lamanites right at this or against the Nephites anymore at this time, but the Nephites, again, they're sitting there going, seeing, realizing, well, anytime they decide to come again, we really can't. We don't have the numbers or the strength, and we don't have the Lord to withstand them. And when they see this, they see that they're feeling in their spirit that as a people, I'm not talking about Moronihah and Nephi himself, as a people, they see they've got a problem. And they say, what has caused it? And now they say it has been, in verse 21, it's been that the people are stiff-necked, meaning their heads are high. They will not bow their heads. They do not go around and bow. In their daily lives, their head is not bowed to the Lord. And I mean that in their daily lives. They're not thinking about the Lord. They're not bowed and thinking about Him and what they're supposed to be doing with Him. They're thinking, their heads are high, looking around at the world, what they can see in the world and what they want from the world as today. And therefore, they set it not at the commandments of God. And when they say set it not, they explain that more. But mostly it means the commandments of God, meaning that He will tell us what to do in all of our lives. He'll tell us personally, but He will also tell us how to set up our government, how to do everything. And that's what they say in verse 22, that they had trampled under their feet the laws of Messiah. And then it goes on to explain which the Lord had commanded him to give to you. So these were not the laws of Messiah, they were the laws of the Lord. Did the Lord give us any laws? Yes. He gave us the Constitution of the United States. And that was the law He gave us. Did we trample it? Yes, we began to trample it under our feet back in that, right after Joseph Smith Day. And they were trampling it under their feet at that time, and Joseph Smith recognized that. Well, then as we see, by the time we moved to Utah and we wanted to create the Utah Territory and become a state, then after that, instead of wanting to create a new country in this new land, remember, when they went to Utah, Utah was not in the United States. Well, they go there, and they wanted to get back in the United States. See, they wanted to join in this trampling of the law or the Constitution that had been given them. And when they became a state, they had to trample the laws of the Constitution just in the formation of the state, because it was done in an illegal manner. And all the states at that time where they were trampling all these laws, and we trample them today. And again, I repeat that in their time, the people have been stiff-necked, and they weren't just all of a sudden, they didn't do this the last 2 or 3 years. Again, it had been a degenerative process through both of the two Helamans. Their time, in the 62 years, actually it had been more than that, it began somewhat under Alma. But from the 62 years since the time of the judges were established, they had began to misuse and abuse their freedom. How long? Obviously, we'd say for a while there in the beginning, it worked fine. But almost immediately, we began to see some degeneration until we saw at the end of a second Helaman, they were changing all the laws and creating new laws and new regulations for the land and for the church. And they were fully in the power of doing things according to man. And that's what he's saying here. By doing things according to man, they, even though they thought they were doing good, they were trampling the freedom principles of the Lord. And again, I repeat that this is the same as our Constitution until, and finally, in 19, our time compared to this time right here, it would best be said to be the same as 1913, when we totally trampled the Constitution and said that in that year, and then we've continued to wipe it out since that time. But the point is, they had saw that they had made another mess of it they totally disavowed the entire money system and goal of the Constitution to keep us a sovereign and free people. They went in a whole new direction starting in 1913. That's where these people were at this time. And again, I repeat, as a church and as a people, we're still further beyond than these people here are right here. And now I would state to you again in verse 24, he explains their state. And he said that the Spirit of the Lord did no longer preserve them, yea, it had withdrawn from them. What have we been talking about here? We've been talking about the law of Moses, the Constitution of the United States, meaning the laws as given by God had been trampled. What did they represent? They represented freedom. So they were, as we've been saying, we continue to try and study what was going on up to this time. They were slowly degenerating until they were at their last vestige, their last portion of the Spirit of God, which was the portion with it, which was the spirit of freedom. And they had finally said, they had finally rejected now the laws that the Lord had set up to maintain freedom, as we have today in rejecting the Constitution, which meant that the Lord's Spirit withdrew from them, and withdrew from them as a people. Obviously, it didn't withdraw from Moroni and Nephi, and any man that would go to it could receive it individually. But they did not have the Spirit in their leadership of the government anymore, but they did have it to a bit in the leadership of the church. That's why, again, I say we're back at the period 1913. The leadership of the government had totally withdrawn from the Spirit of the Lord in 1913, and went on a whole new course and been taken over by the Gadianton robbers. And in 19, there was still some spirit, and it has been in our church up until it was totally withdrawn with Everett Taft Benson, when everyone rejected the last word, when all the leadership rejected the last words of Everett Taft Benson. Then now the spirit is totally withdrawn from the church also. But what I'm saying here, that's where we are there. It's an exact similitude, and we will move on from there until we see again, I would just want to repeat, it's good to think of the year 1913 as being that's where the time was in the Book of Mormon. But if the people of the church of 1913 would have been strong and not desirous to have the things of the world and follow the world, they could have had the strength to even upheld the law, either amongst themselves being led away or been the ensign to change the whole nation at that time, but they chose not to. So there was the spirit in the church, but it had withdrawn from the world, and it was because the people of the church had not supported, as is right here, meaning they had been set at, they had been a stiff-necked people, and they had not wanted to look for the Lord in their in the government of that day, 1913, as they did not want to look to the Lord to have him in the government during this time in chapter 4 of Helaman.